listening to the C Word Radio, the podcast where we ask, what the f*** does young cancer survivorship mean? With me, Helen King, and guests. Subscribe and rate on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Today we're delving into the back catalogue of the C Word Radio and revisiting one of my favourite interviews. I'll be back next week with a brand new episode, so don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you don't miss an episode. Today's episode is going to be slightly different. I've been thinking a lot recently about my experience of cancer and why I started the C Word. And I thought because there are a few new followers on Facebook and Instagram, it might be a good time to do a solo episode and tell you a little bit more about myself. I'm feeling a bit nervous and outside of my comfort zone because I'm used to interviewing people and avoiding talking too much about myself. If you've been listening for a little while, you will know parts of my story. And I won't spend too much time on the diagnosis and treatment because one of the reasons why I started the C Word was I really wanted to create a space where we can talk about life after treatment. Because in my experience, it really has been the after treatment part that has been just as challenging. Perhaps in different ways than the challenges that we go through when we're being diagnosed or having treatment. I love talking to people about that element of it, partly because I want to know how you are doing it, how other people are coping with life after cancer. Grab yourself a cuppa and settle in, and I will tell you the story of me. In 2018, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. It must have been around May because I was just about to start a new job. In fact, it was the Sunday before the Monday I was about to start a new job, and I found a lump when I was in the shower. My hand kind of brushed across it, and at the time I thought, oh, that's really weird. What is that? Because I hadn't felt it before. It felt kind of smooth. It was maybe a oval shape. Pebble was under there. I got my partner to feel and go, oh, what's this? Have you felt this before? But I didn't think of anything of it because I was starting this new job. I was getting in the zone for starting. I have no idea what I did for the rest of that Sunday. And all I remember is that moment in the shower, and that is about it. I started wondering whether I should see a doctor maybe about Tuesday, because lump in your breast, it is one of those things that is always going to cause a bit of anxiety. Cancer just never came to mind. You know, I was 37, and although I know younger people get cancer, it just wasn't in my thoughts. Because I had started this new job, I didn't feel like I could go to my normal GP. I went to a after-hours A&E, and the short of it is that I was diagnosed with non-lactating mastitis because I don't have children. And I can remember it, the nurse saying, because they triage you before you go and see the doctor, oh no, you're too young. It won't be anything bad. Don't worry about it. And even the doctor wasn't particularly worried. My breasts were actually kind of red, and I had this weird ropey thing, and that must have appeared within that space between the Sunday of finding the lump to seeing the doctor. And that's the only way I can describe it. If you imagine running on the top of my breast towards my nipple, and it just felt this weird ropey thing. I was given antibiotics and told I could think about going and getting a scan, but there was no urgency or any reason for me to worry. Fast forward 2 weeks, and I did go get a scan because usually I respond really well to antibiotics, and this lump hadn't gone anywhere. And really thinking about it, I didn't display any other signs of having an infection. I didn't have a temperature. I didn't really feel off. I was a bit tired, but that wasn't unusual. And I knew in that ultrasound appointment that it was cancer. I just knew that there was something sinister because of the demeanour of the sonographer. I don't think she meant to. And I actually think I can remember it. She was really lovely. She was American or Canadian.
if something was going on with her mother at the time, and I don't know whether that influenced her demeanor, I remember lying on the bed and saying, I'll be really fucking angry if it's cancer, because I've had a really hard few years, and getting quite upset. On the screen, these three dark spots appeared, and that was my cancer. This was on a Friday, and by the Monday, I was going in for my mammogram, and I got a phone call from my GP surgery saying, Dr. Borthwick wants you to come in and discuss the results, and you need to bring a support person. It's so interesting. I've spoken to many people over the past year on the C Word about that moment you're diagnosed and you hear those words, you have cancer. And I feel it's this universal thing that you know when the doctor said, and you need to bring a support person, that it's not good. It all happened so quickly. I mean, by that Tuesday, I had a biopsy, and then a few days later, I got the results that yes, it was cancer. It was HER2 positive, no hormonal involvement. I remember that time really well. I remember meeting my parents and with my partner outside the Mercy Breast Centre. My parents just looked like they hadn't slept. They were stressed. I don't know what I was. I think I was numb. I think I was just in this weird space of, I knew life had changed. I knew it was almost a shift in the atmosphere, or something big had shifted, and I knew life had changed. And the treatment path that was recommended to me was to have a mastectomy, chemo, radiation, Herceptin. I remember my surgeon saying, we're going to throw the book at this. And I kind of knew at that point that, okay, this is aggressive. And it was the pathology on my cancer tumours was that it was an aggressive, fast-growing cancer. And life changed, which I'm sure you can all relate to if you've been through a cancer diagnosis. It's so strange remembering back. I'm feeling, if I cry, I do apologize. I'm not much of a crier, but feeling a little bit emotional talking about this, because it really is 3 years ago at this time, this all happened. My Google Photos are reminding me, do you want to see what you were doing 3 years ago? No. My treatment was really intense. I had my mastectomy. I had to have a lot of nodes removed because two or three were found to have cancer in them. And I kind of knew they would, because before I had my mastectomy, you have sentinel node imaging, and they put a radioactive dye in you, and you go the day before and then you go back, and that dye is meant to have moved around and show them the way, and mine didn't. It just didn't. And I mean, apparently that is really rare that it doesn't move, but I kind of feel maybe it was the cancer was blocking that dye from moving. From the mastectomy, I then had fertility treatment because I had not had children. I had my eggs retrieved and they were made into embryos. From there, I had a put in, and then chemo. And all of that stuff happened really rapidly too. I think there was a week where I had the egg retrieval to having the port in and then having chemo starting. And I've spoken about this before with other guests, where there are these little moments where all of a sudden it hits you that, shit, I've got cancer. One of mine was when I was waiting to have my mastectomy, and you sit in this room, I guess it's the pre-op area, and I've got my gown on, the nurses just put the compression stockings on, and I just sat there looking out the window thinking, whoa, I'm about to have my breast removed and I have cancer. And I felt really lonely in that moment, because I think I had a lot of fear. And I knew what I was walking into was going to be quite a process. And then again, before I started chemo, I'd have these meltdowns because it was just really overwhelming, because you didn't know what was going to happen. And I think part of it is that you lose a lot of control over things. You really are handing your body over to the doctors. I had my chemo. Chemo was around about 6 months, 4 to 6 months. I had really intense chemo. I had the most he could give me. He nuked me. He really nuked me. I also had Herceptin because I was HER2 positive, and another drug called Perjeta, which my family paid for, because in New Zealand, not everything is funded. And although Perjeta is funded for some people with HER2 positive, it wasn't in my case. And then I had radiation. I actually found some old Instagram stories, and one of them was from when I was about to finish radiation and my hair had just started coming back. But boy, I looked tired. And what also really struck me was that I'm talking about I don't know what's next, and that bit felt really uncertain and really frightening and, again, lonely, I think, because, and a lot of people talk about this, that you go through this really intense period of having appointments and doctors and support, and then everything finishes and it's like, see you. Or as my oncologist said, we now encourage you to go and live your life. And at that stage, I just didn't know, like, what does this even mean? Go and live your life, go and live a normal life. How on earth do you live a normal life when you have just been through this huge cancer experience? And I know that a lot of people do. I think we all respond differently to these things. My experience was that cancer was really traumatizing. The treatment was really full on. I emotionally and mentally found it really challenging. And physically, it was challenging. I had 2 extra surgeries to repair parts of my body that had been totally destroyed by the chemo and radiation. And with the Herceptin, I had that for a year. So I was really locked into treatment for a long time. And I think about now what the aftermath of that is that I find it really hard going to the doctors, and I find it really hard having any sort of medical intervention. I put my smear test off for 6 months. I think when you have been told you have cancer, there's this underlying fear that you're going to get told again that you have cancer. I will admit I put things off because I find being in the medical system challenging. I think one of the mistakes, I don't know if the mistake's the right word, but basically I wanted to get better really quick. This is my personality, I guess. I've shared that I have ADHD. I like things to happen fast. I do not have patience. And what happened in that first year, actually probably that first 6 months after the radiation and things stopped and I still having Herceptin, is that I just wanted life to go back to normal. I wanted to be earning again. I was so sick of feeling like a burden and relying on people and people supporting me. I just wanted to go back and feel normal, to be honest. But the thing is that nothing felt the same anymore. And I struggled at work. And I will admit 3 years later, I still struggle with work. There are lots of reasons for that, and I'll get into that a bit later. But I think about that first year, and I burnt out quite quickly, because the reality was is that I was not ready for work. I just had this enormous thing happen. I was exhausted. My body was tired. I think emotionally, mentally, and spiritually, I was exhausted, and I really, really struggled. And I think the people around me probably struggled a bit too, because I wasn't the same person. The Helen before cancer is not the Helen post-cancer. So many of people I've spoken to in the past 3 years talk about quite a similar thing, that it's very difficult to regain normality after you've had cancer. Some people do. I think about my lovely guest Shona, who I dubbed the happy lady, who really took cancer as this opportunity to reinvent herself. I admire that. I admire people who can go, yeah, this was a really shit thing that happened to me, but I'm going to blossom. I'm not that person. In fact, I got to almost the end of 2019, and I was so full of grief and anger and confusion, and I was so tired. And I went to a retreat, and that really was a a moment of change for me. It came up on my Facebook feed about this retreat, and I'm not really a retreat person. I do find it quite challenging being around lots of people all the time. But I went, and it was really good. It's what I needed. Basically, it was visiting experts, radiation oncologist and a psychologist, and there was a chaplain. And although it wasn't, you know, Christian based or anything, that there was a spiritual component to it, but in terms of whatever you wanted that to be. And the chaplain actually has this really rare form of cancer that can come back at any time. So it was really interesting hearing everyone's experiences. And in the sessions that I went to, it was all women, and mostly women that had breast cancer. And that was so, it was just so good for me. We got to talk openly and cry openly. And I think I opened myself up and let some of that emotion out. And it was a fabulous weekend and it was so good. But then the weekend stopped and I went back to my normal life where I didn't feel I could be open and honest about how full of grief and anger and confusion I was. And then 2020 happened. We all think back fondly of 2020, don't we? I think that there was a warning. And this may sound a bit cuckoo. If you are in New Zealand or Australia, you will remember the horrific bushfires. And in New Zealand, where I am in Auckland, we had these days where it was this weird orange light. It felt apocalyptic. It just created this really weird feeling. And I think that was almost a warning of what was to come, because in March, New Zealand went into full lockdown. And I found lockdown really challenging because it felt like chemo. There was this outside threat that no one could see, but you had to be really careful with germs. And I found that quite destabilizing. But what it did do is that it opened up the opportunity to explore the idea of a podcast, which I'd been thinking about for a while. And yeah, I guess the rest is history. One of the motivating factors of starting this podcast really has been wanting to provide a space where people can be really honest about cancer. I don't think we are. I think in some spaces we are. I often go on Facebook groups like Shocking Pink, which are fabulous. They provide the space for younger women dealing with cancer. But I've often found that the representation of cancer in the media, imagery and those sorts of things, it just doesn't depict the brutality of cancer. I actually did an article with former colleagues at Stuff who followed me for part of my treatment, and I had my photo taken that showed my mastectomy scar and I had no hair and I was still in menopause, so I was hot and sweaty and exhausted. And to me, that really represented how brutal cancer had been to me. And I think cancer is brutal to a lot of people. Whether you've had breast cancer or bowel cancer or ovarian, it is a brutal disease. That is the part of it I've wanted to kind of highlight to people. We don't all identify being these fearless warriors that beat this disease. I really struggle with those words of warriors and survivors, because so many of us actually do not survive cancer. And I think that we need to make more space for those conversations. And I hope that I am doing that through the C word. But it's not all doom and gloom. I want to highlight that cancer impacts us all in different ways, but often it alters us and changes our perspective on life and can really alter what we can do. I really struggle to work. I mentioned that before. And part of that for me is, and this is slightly different, I could actually do a whole episode of this, that the other gift that cancer gave me was that last year I was diagnosed with ADHD, and that was about maybe 4 to 6 months before I turned 40. So you can imagine a lifetime of having a neurodevelopmental disorder and not knowing it, but knowing your whole life that you are a bit different and that you respond to the world differently, that you don't understand why and you can't change that. So that was life changing for me as well. It was a huge, huge thing. And cancer gave that to me because stress and the ADHD brain are not friends. And one of the things that really led me to get my diagnosis of ADHD was that I couldn't figure out why things were so hard. And I know that cancer was really challenging, and that in the years leading up to having cancer, I had been through a really toxic work environment that led to bullying. My marriage had ended. I had another really altering health event that really changed the course of what I wanted to do. It stopped me in my tracks. And then I was in another work situation which totally burnt me out. And I know all of those things are really stressful, and I know that cancer is really stressful and traumatizing. And then we had a pandemic. I could just feel it. My intuition was telling me, yeah, there's something going on here. And again, just by chance and coincidence, I ended up meeting people who also have ADHD, and it led to me getting a diagnosis. And the life-changing thing for me is now I understand myself, I understand my brain, and I understand why I have been so greatly affected by all these stressful things. And what it has meant for me is working is really challenging, because I am exhausted. Life is exhausting for people with ADHD. The world is a very overstimulating place. I think cancer, in a way, was my body's way of saying, hey, lady, you need to slow down, and we've been telling you this for years. And I understand this now in the context of having ADHD, is I am all or nothing, man. I am all in or I am all out. But also, I think I've overcompensated for the ADHD by trying to achieve. And I've burnt myself out several times in my adult life by trying to push myself and achieve and put myself up to these ridiculously high standards and expectations. And I think the gift of cancer and the gift of the pandemic was going, no, I need to stop. I need to slow down. And now, do I do it perfectly? No. Do I still overcommit myself at times? Yes. But what I do now is I listen to my body, and if it's telling me I'm tired, then I rest. I take better care of myself. I was listening to a podcast recently, and this really resonated with me, and I feel like it's going to resonate with a lot of people who listen, because one thing I found, and it is just a theory, it's not scientific, but if this relates to you, please let me know. I think a lot of people who have had cancer, or a lot of people that I've met, were high achievers, got very, very stressed, may have gone through something quite stressful, whether it's a marriage breakup. I've met people who have had loss of pregnancies or huge things happen in their lives, and then a few years down the track, they get cancer. That definitely happened to me. I was listening to a podcast where this woman describes herself as being a recovering perfectionist, which I also very much relate to. But sorry, I am getting to my point. What she was talking about is that she got to this point of burnout, and she could no longer do all the things that she used to do. And that included the wake up at 5 a.m. to go to the gym and really work out and go to work and achieve. And she has kids, so it's all that sort of stuff. I relate to that so much, because that is my story too, that I think back now, the years leading up to me getting cancer, and I was that person. I went to the gym nearly every day. I boxed and I trained, and I trained hard, and I, you know, was that person who wasn't exercise unless you were really thrashing yourself. And I thrashed myself because I felt I needed to achieve. And I think also being a bigger person, you feel like you need to prove that you are not lazy and that you are exercising. I can't do that. And this podcast was talking about the same thing, where she physically cannot do all those things anymore. Her body won't let her. And I feel the same. My body will not let me. I have two very active dogs and I walk them most days and I do yoga and that's it. Sometimes I feel shame around that because I see interviews with people who've had cancer and they talk about that they worked out the entire time they were having treatment, or now they still do CrossFit or those sorts of things. And I feel I had to be totally stopped in my tracks. I had to be completely and utterly stopped to really hear what my body was telling me. And I think my body had been telling me to stop and slow down and to look after myself for a long time, but I was not listening. That's not scientific, and I don't know if there are medical professionals listening. You might be going, well, that's not scientific. I feel that was my experience, and that was what my intuition was telling me. Now, I try and eat as best I can, and I do love walking my naughty dogs, although they drive me insane. And my body just feels it needs to be nurtured. And I feel like that's okay. That's where I am. And although I sometimes miss my pre-cancer body, and I miss that I was able to do all these things, at the same time, you can't be hit over the head with something as huge as cancer and not stop and go, hang on a minute, something needs to really change. Or what was all of that for? I think that learning acceptance is a really challenging thing, and it's something that a lot of people who've gone through cancer have to face or do face. And I can only speak from the experience of someone who has had breast cancer, and I would love to know from other people who have had other types of cancer how this affects you. I had a mastectomy with no reconstruction. I have one breast. I wish I'd been given the option of going flat, and I think I probably would have taken it, because I struggle with just having one breast. I feel really self-conscious, and what I have really noticed is cancer caused me to really lose myself and to really not know what I like anymore. And I think part of that is that my body changed. And it's not just that I have put on weight, is that my body shape has changed from having the mastectomy. Nothing looks the same anymore. The style of clothing that I wore just didn't feel right. It's taken me about 3 years to really start to explore again and look at clothes that make me feel good. And this may seem like a smaller part of it, but I feel maybe it's something a lot of other people might relate to, that it's not just about your hair growing back and getting back to life when everything about you has changed. It can be really challenging to find yourself again and to know where you fit and to know what you like and to accept the person you see in the mirror. And my head can be as logical as can be and can say, well, my body isn't my worth and my looks aren't my worth and your looks fade and those sorts of things. However, it doesn't always sink in. It doesn't always compute. It's definitely a process, and I feel maybe it's a lifelong process. Gosh, there's so many components of this. I keep thinking, oh, I've missed that. Oh, I need to mention that. Fear of reoccurrence, anxiety, how it impacts relationships. There's so many things that I feel I could, yeah, I could touch on and talk about. I don't want to go on and on. I feel I maybe do a better job of discussing those things with someone else. Or maybe I can do them in another episode and just talk about how these things have affected me, because I went through this whole process with a partner and it's been a challenge. I think that's another thing we don't talk about enough, is how our cancer experience impacts those who are closest to us. If that's something that you'd like to share, get in touch. I would love to do an episode on that, how cancer impacts our relationships, whether it's our intimate relationships or our friendships all of those things, let me know. Come and be my guest and let's talk about that stuff because, oh boy. Luckily, I'm with a very good man and we have a good life together and we are about to embark on fertility treatment. That is all for the episode. But I hope you have been keeping up. We had a fantastic conversation with Rebecca Van Dyke, who is going through the same thing. I will put the link to that in the show notes because if fertility or infertility is something that you've faced, I feel it's probably a conversation that you'll relate to and maybe you'll normalize some of that stuff. That's part of my story in a nutshell. There are so many other facets to it that I could talk about. The struggling with the changes in my body, what treatment was like. If people want to know, I'm more than happy to do shorter videos or explanations or things that work for me. Or if you have things that you would like to share, let me know. I love hearing from you guys. Hearing from you and getting feedback and things is really, really awesome. And it helps me keep going. I feel really inspired. Thank you so much for joining me and listening to my story. I hope it has been interesting or insightful or helpful in some way. I am taking a break over the school holidays. I do not have children, although I am on auntie duty with my nephew for one day, so wish me luck. During that time, I am going to be doing more interviews and I'm really excited about what I have lined up. I'm going to be talking more on the issue of fertility and how cancer impacts parenting and motherhood. I'm also going to be talking to a man who has been dealing with prostate cancer. I want to say I'm really excited about all these things, but sometimes I feel really kind of weird saying that I've got these great interviews coming up when it's to do with cancer, because cancer is a shitty thing. But I feel inspired when I talk to people. I'm looking forward to being able to bring those interviews to you. If you haven't already, I am doing a feedback survey. I have had some really lovely feedback. You guys are awesome. I've read some of these feedbacks. I've gone all shy because I've gone, oh, wow, people are listening. You love my honesty and the humor. And I'm glad you do because that's one of my things is that I am honest to a fault at times. I will put the link in the show notes. The link is on my Facebook page. I am sorting out a wee treat to entice you to answer some of these questions. Your feedback really helps me. It helps me shape a podcast that is going to really serve the cancer community. So click on that link. Take you about 5 minutes. The C Word is every Sunday at 11:55 a.m. on Planet FM 104.6 or anytime at planetaudio.nz/the C Word.
The mirror's image, it tells me it's home time, but I'm not finished, cause you're not by my side. And as I loved her for I saw you leaving, carrying your shoes, decided that once again I was just dreaming of opening to you. Now it's 3 in the morning, and I'm trying to change your mind. Left you multiple missed calls, and to my message you replied. Why'd you only call me when you're high? High. Why'd you only call me when you're high? Somewhere darker, talking the same shit. I need a partner. Well, are you out tonight? It's harder and harder to get you to listen. More I get through the gears. Incapable of making all right decisions and having bad ideas. Now it's 3 in the morning and I'm trying to change your mind. Left you multiple missed calls and to my message you replied. Why'd you only call me when you're high? Calling when you're high. And I can't see you, you wonder where am I?
to bomb me, baby. Why'd you only call me when you're hot? I'm gonna
what's your name, huh?
Maybe I'm slick.
Yeah, well, don't be too slick now.
A little closer, now you got my attention. Baby, you're my superstar. Keep showing me moves that are blazing, 'cause you're teasing my imagination. Don't believe I can fight temptation. I think you already
don't care. So come on and show me what you got. Stop for me, you're really non-stop. Tonight you're gonna get your time to shine.
Shine, 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 shine,
for someone special, could you be the one? If you're nothing, don't get jealous, just keep moving on. Feet to the beat, so hot the heat's bringing out the shine. So clean, so fresh, a real good kick, so I might make you mine. In the midst of a fierce competition, get a view from a better position. A little closer, now you got my attention. Baby, you're my superstar. Keep showing me moves that are blazing, cause you're teasing my imagination. Don't believe I can fight temptation, I think you already know.
Show me what you got. So be your living non-stop. Tonight you're gonna get your time to shine.
Get a view from a better position. A little closer, now you got my attention. Baby, you're my superstar. Keep showing me moves that are blazing, cause you're teasing my imagination. And don't believe I can fight temptation, I think you are ready.
Okay, baby, so come on and show me what you got. So be your living non-stop. Tonight you're gonna get your time to shine.
Planet Oil.